Bob asked me to talk about the relationships between, you know, the athletic trainers and us, the physical therapist and us, the coaches and us, whoever, which I was going, well, I'm not sure how I'm going to do this. So after about 5 or 6 hours this weekend, because I always wait to the last minute, kind of here's what I came up with. And I don't want to offend anybody by the title, but I mean the don't call me Doc thing, because I think that's something that we all have to think about. You guys get called Doc more than I do, but it's a little pet peeve of mine, because we all have names, you know, and we're not all the same. Okay. And that goes for the athletic trainers, that goes for the orthopedic surgeons and everybody else. You know, we all have names, and I think that's important in this world, and it's important in all those relationships that Bob wanted me to talk about. So you can call me Walt, you can call me Dr. Lowe, you can call me Shithead. Whoop, I'm at Second Baptist. You at least the lightning was yesterday, you know, but to me, the doc thing is pretty impersonal. And I think you guys that are trainers at high school and everything else, because when I see kids come out, I go, who's your trainer? Doc. I'm like, no, they have a name. What's his name? But anyway, I think as we get started on relationships, I think all of us being on a first name relationship is really important to making this work. So, you know, just one of the little motivational slides. But when I walk through this, this is really the core of the relationships that I want to focus on, because I really want to be with people who think the same way I do, want to accomplish the same things I do, and more important than anything else, care, you know, the same way I do. We can overcome a lot of stuff if we just care about what we're doing. So I'm going to touch a little bit on athletes, which I think are our patients, and we have to understand that they are patients like most other patients. Athletic trainers, physical therapists, talk a little about coaches, general managers, owners, agents, but not much, and then a little about other physicians. And so when I look at the relationship with the athletes or with our patients, they're the reason I do this. They're the reason you guys do this, okay? Everything else comes secondary to that, and I think we need to have that focus as we move forward. So they always come first. You guys have probably heard Andrew's talk. You've heard a bunch of other people talk, and I think across the sports medicine world, I think we always believe our players always come first, despite what the newspaper says, despite what ESPN says, whatever. Those of us that live this world, for sure, that's the way we think. There's no question that the better we know our athletes, our patients, the better we can care for them. You know, they depend on us, as you guys know, on the field, in the clinic, in the operating room, through their recovery, until they return to play. And so it's not just a, hey, the surgery was successful, when you get called, when they're in the recovery room. That's only the beginning. You know, they depend on us to get them all the way through. Parents, especially, and almost everybody in here is involved at the high school level or lower levels even, and we know that parents are a significant issue in caring for the young athlete. They're not always aligned. They're not always as the same thought process, and that's something that we have to figure out. Sometimes you have to ask the parents to leave the room, you know, to find out what it's really about. And then I think it's our responsibility, your guys, mine, all the other sports medicine physicians, to debunk the myths, okay? And the myths are rampant out there. You have a Tommy John, you're going to throw better than you ever threw. Bull, you know what, okay? You tear your ACL, you're going to be faster than you used to be. Yeah, not really. You know, you tear your ACL, you have a patellar tendon graft. It's going to be stronger than your old ACL. Not a chance. Okay. So right now, there is nothing that I can think of that we do that makes it better than what it was when it started. And I think that has become the level of expectation in sports medicine. Okay, so we have a lot to live up to. I don't think we have to be negative about it, but I think we have to be realistic, and we have to understand where we're going to go, and we can't be disappointed in not being better or not living up to those myths, because for the most part, there's a lot of myths that just aren't true. So this is one of my favorite coffee mugs. And I wish I had them sitting in every exam room, because I'd hand them to some parents for sure. These guys aren't hard to take care of, but they're all different. I mean, these two guys, you know, you could tell them whatever you want. They'd say, hey, whatever you think. This guy, he's a little different. You know, I have to manage a whole different set of situations than I do with Vince, who we just talk about what's the best barbecue place in town and what's his new barbecue recipe. I mean, that kind of stuff. Cushing, I have to convince him not to go get DMSO IVs every day. You know, he's had Regenikine in every joint in his body. He's into all the holistic, crazy stuff, witch doctoring stuff, in anything you can think of. If Brian thinks it's going to give him an advantage, he's going to do it. So it's a very different relationship to manage him versus, you know, some of the other guys. So if we move on to the athletic trainers, and I think this is nothing against the physical therapist in here today, but I think this conference is about the athletic trainers and for the athletic trainers, and obviously for the physical therapist too. But I think when we look at the physician athletic trainer relationship, that's a very important relationship in the care of all these, you know, young athletes for sure. So I kind of take a step back and thinking about this last night, you know, do you sometimes look at the people you're working with and think to yourself, bring it on. Whatever we have to do with this team of people, we can make it happen. And I think that's how you define the A team. And A team people like to work with A team people, okay? And that's the confidence I want to have in the athletic trainers, whether it's at a school that just my fellows go to, whether it's at the Texans or U of H or wherever. I want to feel comfortable that whatever happens, we can handle it, you know? And I think that's the case. Far and away, it's the case in most settings. So the real part of the relationship is I want to work with 18 people. And I think 18 athletic trainers want to work with 18 sports medicine physicians. And more than anything else, when you're trying to dissect out who's good for this, who's not, I think if we fall back on that, you know, we're going to be just fine. I don't lose any sleep at night on a Sunday, and I should with the microscope that's on us. But that team on the field with Jeff and Roland and, you know, the other physicians, Flores and Lintner and everybody that's there, including spine guys and neurosurgeons and everything else, I think no matter what happens, even if your head coach has a stroke, we can handle it. Okay. And so unfortunately, been there, done that. So qualities, trying to think of qualities of A-team people or people, and I think A-team people are actually doing this because they love it. Okay. They're not A-team people because they were born that way. I think loving what you do to make a living turns you into an A-team person. So they're proactive, they're positive, they're confident, they're competent, they're trustworthy. They do whatever it takes. They're there when they don't have to be. They're teachers. They're very good teachers, usually. They're compassionate. They're communicators. They're for sure team players. And all in all, and I'll hopefully show you a little bit of this too, you have to have a sense of humor to do this for a living, okay? And it's really hard. You guys work harder than most everybody in any job that's out there. And if you don't keep a sense of humor about it, it's pretty hard. And so it follows that the team position should be a team player. Also, so I didn't wake up to be mediocre today, and you guys shouldn't wake up to be mediocre. That's not what sports medicine's all about. This is the first of the JJ quotes. I figured I'd make this the JJ Watt talk this morning, but he said, never be satisfied with anything, never be happy just being good. Every single day you need to do something to make yourself better than everybody else, and that's the only way we're going to improve. And I think that's true. Now, I don't know if somebody told him to say that or not, but that's actually the way he conducts himself, and his actions speak louder than his words. You just don't see that on the field. You see that in every single thing this guy does, and he's a guy worth emulating. So the expectations I would have of you, and then I'm going to be interested to hear the expectations you guys would have of us too, but I expect you to really know the player because you guys are there with him. No matter how much I'm there, or how much your team position's there. Nobody knows the players like you guys do, okay? You need to know the family. Same thing. I don't know them from Adam until something bad is going on usually. I want you to know what happened. I love the world of IT and video until this morning, but, you know, showing up with video pictures, you know, all the stuff you guys have access to now of watching every play of every game, the kids can watch every play of every game. That's meaningful to see what happened. It's much more meaningful to me than hearing what happened. So all those things I think are great. We all have to be accessible. We all have to answer our phone. And that goes both ways. You know, we have to be honest. And that's a hard thing to be because we all want to win. No one's in this to lose every game. for sure, but we still have to be honest because that's our job. We have to communicate. We have to be realistic, and I would expect that, you know, from all of you. We need to know when to ask for help. That's a hard thing too, because, you know, some of us think we can do everything and think we do it all best, and some of you know that may not be the case, you know, when it's out there. And so know when to ask for help. You know, players are always complex. It's never as easy as it looks. There's always something lying under the covers. And it's good to know that because it helps us get them well and guide them in the right direction. And remember, and I think we all have always thought this, our primary job is to protect the player's health and safety. Okay. Now that's the buzzword of the NFL. It's been the buzzword for 2 years, but seriously, that's been the case for the last 20 years. Okay. There's other things that put it to the forefront now, but I don't think it's any different than when Brad was under 40, which was a long time ago. I just had to say that for Brad because he did get me into this, and you know, he may be the only one in here older than me, which is great. But anyway, and then I think you have to be objective. That is a real key, I think. And the older you get doing this, the more objective you get, because you start to see through all those promises you made before and realize they were probably unrealistic promises. So be objective when we're evaluating players. Be objective when we're returning the player to the field. And I think you'll hear a lot about that. And I didn't want to steal some of the thunder of some of the other people lecturing this afternoon and tomorrow. But the return to play decision should be the most serious decision, because re-injuries, one of the primary reasons they occur is we make a bad decision on return to play when kids aren't ready. So I think it's a really important part. So this is, we'll see if this works. So this is my example of Cage. He had elbows. I don't think it's, is it working? Can you guys, yeah. Okay, so this was 2 days stop. Actually, can you hear me now? Yeah, one.
Put it right up there. Put it right up in front.
So again, I apologize to Second Baptist for this before I start it. But this is one day post-op, and I call Jeff, and I go, how's he doing? And Jeff goes, well, I'll show you.
Whoop. Fucking Wolverine, Doc. Did you even go into my elbow? I can't tell. Fuck you, bro.
I don't know if that worked, but now it did. So much for technology. But that's the kind of communication you want. You want to hear from the player. You want to hear from the trainer. You want to hear from everybody. That's what I want, is to be in the middle of it all. So if we move on to the physical therapist and the physical therapy relationship, it's actually no different. It's the same thing I just put out there, that the involvement, the care is different. The time is different than the athletic trainers have. It's in between the time that athletic trainers have with our players and the physician has with our players, because they're seeing the therapist when they're in a therapy clinic. Some of you guys are their therapist also, and there's a bunch of really good athletic trainer therapists in this room for sure. But it's the same. It's the same qualities, you know, it's the same everything. And when I look at the team that I'm associated with Russ and Roland and Jeff and Roland, obviously you guys know we're PTATCs, just incredible group of people. And I think they're both great therapists. I think Roland, Jeff, great athletic trainers. And I think they work as mentors for everybody else in this system. And so these are A team guys, and that's sort of the point of my talk this morning, is that's the kind of people we all want to be associated with, and that's certainly the kind of person, people, and therapist I want to be associated with. So things that my expectation of physical therapy is, I think you therapists have to get to know your patient too. You get to know their parents. You get to understand their expectations. Please don't be protocol driven, okay? Protocols are guidelines. Okay. They're not dogma. Okay, you have to think. You have to observe. Patients recover differently. They need to be milestones. Use your knowledge to treat them. Don't go by a protocol. Be very hands-on. It's the worst thing about medicine today in the physical therapy world, is all the forces are there for the therapist to have to take their hands off the patient. Okay, and I think your hands need to be on them. Okay, you need to think outside of the box, you know, those things. This is an outside of the box. This is BFR, you know, one of our guys, one day post knee scope. And I think either Roland or Jeff, I think Jeff's going to talk about BFR. I think it's not a miracle, but it's one of the biggest advantages or biggest new techniques that I've seen since I've been doing this, because it lets us address strength loss immediately. Okay? It lets us address strength loss in non-weight-bearing situations and big microfractures, those kind of things. And we all know that getting strength back is the biggest challenge, to have people pass return-to-play tests, be safe when they go back in play. So for the therapist, please don't be protocol-driven. Please think outside the box. You know, obviously be objective, be accessible. And more than anything else, I think the true sports medicine physician wants to be in the loop. And I can't tell you how many emails a day I get from Morgan or Lane or Chris or, you know, Jackie or any of the therapists that I work pretty close with. It's just a little quick note. Hey, I saw this guy. Here's what happened. I think we're hitting a bump in the road, those kind of things. And keeping everybody in the loop, I think, is very important to doing this. So just a little bit outside of the box stuff. So I think I showed this last year. This is Chris with one of our young soccer players who did a little. She had a knee dislocation on her right knee, and she's missing her left one in a car wreck out there. And so that's outside the box. Okay, who's going to push her to get to the level where on a knee that she had a PCL, an ACL, and a medial side, all reconstructed, and this is about 6 months post-op, to do that with nothing on the other leg, okay? That's more impressive to me than this guy. And this is pretty impressive, but what Amy did was a whole lot more impressive to me. Now, his box is a little higher, you know? But same thing, you know, you always got to push these people to be as good as they can be, because remember, it's pretty unlikely we're going to make them better than they were before. And then, like I said, we want to stay in the loop, and I showed this last year too, but when you say how they're doing, sometimes a picture's worth a thousand words. You know, this is after Brian's last knee surgery. I know you guys can't hear it. It's just not working. Even this won't work. Anyway, enough said about him being a whack job. I love him, though. Is this really? Maybe I just take this off and put it up there. I may try that next time, because that ain't working worth a damn. So a little bit about coaches, GMs, agents, you know, in that world. None of them actually have four letters, but anyway, some of them are four-letter words. But anyway, you know, complete transparency is the only way to deal with those people. You can't make promises you don't keep, because they're not going to keep any of their promises to you. For the most part, I'd accept Rick Smith in that world, who has to be the best general manager on the planet. I actually have a GM that comes to every surgery, pays attention, asks questions, probably knows the anatomy and the procedures now as good as some of the residents and fellows do. You have to be very objective with them. And like I said, you always have to walk into the room and almost tell yourself, I'm here as the player's advocate. I'm here to protect his health and safety. Because when you do that, it's best for everybody. It's not that that's cliche to say that. It's just that's actually best for everybody. That's best for the team. That's best for everybody else. And so, you know, game day is one thing. You know, communication. I love these little earphones we have to put in now. They're the most aggravating thing on the planet. That's so the box can call us and tell us that they just saw something that we saw 10 minutes before they realized they were supposed to call us. But the communication line is very different on game day. On game day, what I think goes to Jeff, and Jeff goes to the head coach. Head coach doesn't want to have anything to do with me on game day, and so that's the communication line. You know, on Monday morning, it's a little different. Then everybody's all ears, and there's a meeting like this every Monday morning that every little detail, every MRI image, every everything. So never believe ESPN when they're saying they're going to get an MRI later this week, and they'll say more. We know, and I'm sure pretty much every other team does, at least they should. We know on Sunday night what the problem is. You know, we may not have the MRI till Monday morning at 7:30 in the morning or something, but there's no delay in information. It's just one of the things that the press puts out there that isn't real. I think we know right away. So I'm going to try to play this. You guys probably already know what it is. Let's see if you can hear it here. But this is sort of the reality. Whoop. This is sort of the reality of the coach. So anyway, that's probably the most true slide I've shown today. because, you know, they're all motivated in different ways. They all definitely have to know who they're going to have that week. They're all definitely worrying about the next opponent already. I'm not saying it because I don't like the situation. It's just they really want to hear, I can have him back before they can have him back is probably in it. So last thing is our relationships with other physicians, and then I'll just tell a couple of stories. But, you know, no one can do this job by themselves, and nobody should get their feelings hurt from our standpoint if other physicians are involved, okay? I believe in the way we handle every team that I work with is you should only do the things you're really good at. Okay, foot and ankle guys ought to do foot and ankle stuff, and hand guys ought to do hand stuff, and sports guys ought to do sports stuff. I know that's not reality in some situations, but when it can be reality, you don't want your guys having to read about what they're doing the night before. Okay, and in this day and age in Houston, Texas, the level of subspecialization around the city is so high, and I should know that because I have 100 guys in our department right now. The level of subspecialization is really high, and the access to those subspecialists should be just as easy as it is. And so I think we have to think long and hard and direct our patients to where it's not just a case, it's an outcome we're looking for. Nothing is determined in the recovery room except a good start, okay? And so there's more to managing things than being able to do the surgery. And I think that's where, I'm just being honest, I think that's where the differences is made between using people that do these things all day, every day. Most of the surgery we all learned in residency and can do it just fine. It's the management afterwards that I think becomes really important to those return to play decisions and safety of return to play, which interestingly enough, in the hands of subspecialists usually happens sooner than it would in those that aren't used to managing it. So that those two tend to line up. I think we should value second opinions, okay? They're good. I may not agree with them. They may not agree with me, but I think it's okay. I think it forms a discussion that can be had. I don't think we should ever talk bad about other surgeons, other physicians that are involved. I really believe everybody's trying to do their best, and we ought to factor those things into our final decision making. And then the head team physician for sure has to function as a quarterback. Okay, can't do it all. He has to make the right decisions. He does have to communicate. He does have to call the plays, but sometimes that play is going to see somebody else. Okay, and when you guys are looking for the right team physician for you to have out there, those are kind of the things I think you ought to think about. This group we have, if you look down this line, that this was at one of the dinners at Indy, because that's the only joy of being in Indy in February for sure, is, you know, Jeff, our head trainer, Mark Prasarn is a spine guy, very capable. Kevin Varner is foot and ankle. He's the chair over at Methodist. He's not in my group, but I think Kevin's outstanding. He's been part of our team forever. Tom Hunt's down at the end. He's a sports hand surgeon. He's the chair down at Baylor. But the reason those guys are there is not because they're my partners. It's because I think they're the guys that give our players the best chance of having the best care in this city. And so that's the reason I make those decisions. Jim Muntz, if you guys don't know him, you're lucky because he's crazy. But he's actually, I think, the best internist in town because every player loves this guy and just gets so attached to him that, and Brad will attest to this, even guys from the old Oiler age are all still part of Jim's practice because he's very attentive. He's a great quarterback. He takes care of everything. Flores is going to talk next, part of that same team. And, you know, so I think you want your team physician to build a team around you. Now, clearly at the NFL level, all these guys show up on game day. They don't have to show up to a high school game, but you ought to know who the go-to people are for you, you know, and I think that's an important thing in building the A team from that standpoint. Bob wanted me to talk a little bit about what it's like to be in the NFL. It kind of already has. I think this says a lot because when I look at this, I have too many jobs, that's for sure, but for me, this is 90 full days of work on top of another full-time job and a busy clinical practice because I was trying to negotiate a better deal with the Texans last year, and that's actually what it was for me in time, was 90 full days of work. I think it's really fun. Obviously, I wouldn't do it if I didn't. It's a really good experience. It can be really frustrating. It can be bad. I mean, you know, when you get called by the league on your way off the field asking why you let Matt Schaub go back in two plays after he had his ear knocked off in Denver, and saying, you know, they're going to come down and investigate. And I said, well, come on, because he doesn't have a concussion. But it makes you question, you know, what you're doing. It's really tiring. That's for sure. I think I'll put it on another slide, but away night games, they're a nightmare. You know, we usually get home at 6 a.m., go straight to work, go straight to the GM's office. You know, it can be a pretty tiring, especially the older you get. Like I said, the time commitment's ridiculous. But in the end, I wouldn't do it if it wasn't really rewarding. We're lucky in this town. We have great ownership. We have a great general manager, like I told you before. Our head coach is very supportive now. We have a great locker room. And you guys are pretty good at reading between the lines. That was awesome. I was trying to figure out how I was going to say that. And, you know, we're getting better. And that's always great when you see yourself getting better, because at this time of year, you know, we're still undefeated and we still have a lot of hope, you know, going into next year. We were surprised the NFL did not know the NFLPA had commissioned a player survey about all the teams and all their medical care, and it's confidential information. I can't show it. I would love to. But we just had to go to Miami last year, five teams. We are one of those five teams that was picked out as the top five teams of providing health care to our players. And that's something Jeff and I were, thank you. It's something Jeff and I were very proud about, and don't you think we didn't lay it on Rick's desk the day it came in, for sure. But, you know, that defines an A-team. That defines a group that cares, and that defines, I think, a group that's doing it for the right reason. And so it is rewarding when, in all the negative things that come out about the NFL right now, when it comes down to the brass tacks of what the players really think, when they endorse the care they get, and most of ours come back even when they leave, I think you feel like you're doing the right thing. Like I said, it's fun. It makes you happy. You know, there are times that it's okay to cheer, but that's usually when the game's over. You know, during the game, it's pretty serious work. There's some bad stuff. You know, the Toradol things. We could talk all day about that. The pain medicine the pain medicine distribution that the NFL got accosted about, and some very good team physicians got taken in back rooms after games and really interrogated by the DEA. I feel lucky to have avoided that, but it would have been nothing because we don't use them. You know, the concussion issues, all you guys are familiar with, they're real. Again, do I think a lot differently than I did 20 years ago? Not really. Are there rules in place to ensure right decisions are made and better decisions are made? Yes. Are they helping us? Yes. But again, it really shouldn't change what we thought. I don't think any of us have ever thought we should send a guy back who couldn't run without vomiting or, you know, that kind of stuff is kind of crazy. The microscope is frustrating, for sure. Right now, we have two trainers up in the box trying to help us pick out plays that may have been dangerous to players. The NFLPA has two observers in the stands watching everything we do and reporting back to the NFLPA, who immediately reports those concerns to Elliot Pellman at the NFL. And if they have any, you'll hear about them in the locker room after the game. Like I said, the away night games, they're pretty challenging. It's pretty hard for me to sleep on a plane when you're packed in. And so it's tiring. And then the Harvard report, which is, again, another confidential report that's coming out this fall, will generate a whole new level of disdain for the NFL team physicians that basically says we're too conflicted to take care of our players. And my response and our written response, they never talked to a team physician. They never came down and spent a game on the sideline with the team physician. They were never there at 7 o'clock Monday morning for 5 hours helping the players. So it's a philosophical reason why we shouldn't be able to do this. And that's what I'm most proud of. You're right, you shouldn't be able to do it, but we do. And we've been doing it for a long time. And I actually think we do it very well. And if you dissect it out in the players' world, I think they think at least a few of the teams, five of them, do it very well. And the ones that don't, I think, are willing to learn to try to get there from those that do. This is really frustrating. I don't think Jeff's here yet, but it makes him mad every time I bring this up. But I still bring it up every time, because last year the NFL sent these signs that were mandatory to put up in every locker room. It says, respect the game. I'll just read through it. Respect opponents, teammates, friends, coaches, agents, coworkers, women, officials, media, fans, the league, family, management, leaders, trainers. Where are the damn doctors, all right? I mean, it pisses me off every time I walk into the training room. So every time I walk in, I make sure I tell Jeff, as soon as you can take that damn sign down, I want it down, you know? But it's very rewarding, though. And, you know, you have guys like this that were huge challenges, you know, daily babysitting stuff. And it's really fun to watch them grow up. It's really fun to watch them get through stuff that you never thought they might get through. So I'm going to try again. I don't know if you'll see this. So this is now at 5 days from his elbow scope. And he just sends these out of the blue. You know, I mean, it's crazy. But that's the relationship I like having with my players. And then this is probably my favorite one, if you can hear it.
Cat, walk. I'm just wondering, did we even do elbow surgery?
So you get the point. He's hard to control. It's probably the right thing to say. But I love the little quips. The part that's rewarding is the relationships we have with them. You know, you see the text message from him that followed, exactly, that followed those three videos from him. Walt's just the best surgeon in the world, and Jeff Kaplan is just the best athletic trainer in the world. Jeff replies, and you're the best football player and athlete in the world. And, of course, the JJ replies, precisely. I go, you guys crack me up. Have a great weekend. You know, let's get out of here. So anyway, thank you for everything you do. I love what I do. I hope you guys too, and I hope you have a great conference. Thanks.